The Angels and the Giants are right here in Tempe, Arizona. Bruce Jenkins joins us. Bruce, how are you on this Sunday?
Doing very well, Marty. How are you doing?
Well, very well. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm just sitting here. There's a few things I want to talk to you about today. But, you know, the Giants lead the Cactus League. They lead the majors in attendance in spring training. They've 15 games, 156,000, so they're getting 10,000 a game, which, heck, is pretty good. And on the road, they get, like, over 7,000. But I'm looking at this Angel thing here, and I'm saying, who are these people? Did all these people come from Anaheim and that surrounding area? Because we are in Tempe. They can't be the students. They can't live here. But I'm telling you something. This place is packed with Angel fans.
Yeah, well, for a long time, they trained in Palm Springs. And I've known of quite a few Angel fans who live down there who would make that trek religiously every year. And, of course, not nearly as big of a haul from Orange County to Palm Springs. But I think a lot of them got in the habit of it, and they've just extended it to, you know, wherever they're going to be, that's where we're going to be. It's pretty good, pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, and again, you know, you and I have gone to enough away spring training games from Scottsdale, and, you know, you see that black and orange all over the place. But I'm telling you something. I'm looking at all these people and saying, did they all drive here from Orange County? Because I'm telling you something. This is a sea of red, which leads me to believe Artie Moreno has a good idea of marketing. He knows what he's doing down there because he has to compete with the Dodgers.
Either that or they paid everybody $5 to wear red on the way in.
All right. Well, whatever. But it's a nice atmosphere out here today. And you got those buttes in the background and I-10 over the right field wall. And we've got Zito and Vargas today. And for Barry Zito, Bruce, he's had a nice spring. And this is his sixth start of the spring. And he's probably got another one to go.
Yeah, he seems to be settled in pretty well. So many springs we've seen him with the Giants. It was like a long episode of tinkering with his delivery and fixing this and that. But I think he's pretty set in his mind. Obviously, he's coming off a wildly successful postseason. His mind is right. He's comfortable with himself and where he stands in the organization. And I think, you know, if I were a fan, I'd be considerably less worried about Zito than I would have been all these other years. He is who he is, and he's very, very good. He's good in the clutch, and this is a guy, I tell you, he's been gifted with one of the great arm, most resilient arms that we've seen in recent years. His pitches don't come in hard, but that doesn't mean he's not exerting a lot to throw a major league fastball. And here's a guy who's never been hurt, never missed a start. And from a guy that everybody sort of reviled, he's sort of turned into old Mr. Reliable.
Well, I'll tell you this, with this kind of arm, and, you know, we go back to the Frank Tanana days or even the Jamie Moyer, you know, people who, you know, lefties who understood what they were doing,
mm-hmm.
He could pitch another 5 years. I mean, you know, he doesn't have arm trouble. And if he figures out how to command this stuff, he could pitch for 5 more years.
Oh, there's no doubt. He's a very youthful guy in general. You know, he's in for the long haul in life and on the mound. And the way he takes care of himself, it's time-honored. I mean, this goes back to when he was a teenager, even before that. He's been a long tosser for years and years and years, and his program works extremely well for him. So there's no reason to change it. And, yeah, I could see him lasting quite a while. In a Giants uniform, who knows? But as long as he pitches the way he did last fall, I'm sure he's welcome there.
Yeah, lefties can pitch forever, I will tell you that. Really, that's one of the baseball adages. Did you get to see any of the game yesterday with Lincecum?
I've got it on tape, and my daughter had a sleepover with a bunch of girls over, and they sort of commandeered the main TV room. I'm going to catch up to it today. I want to see Cespedes' homer off Lincecum. I want to see Belt and Noonan, and there's a lot of things I want to catch up on there.
Yeah, it had some moments yesterday, and just chatting with Mike Kruko a little while ago about Lincecum, I said, my goodness, what do you say? And, of course, you know, he's optimistic most of the time anyway. He thought, you know, the off-speed stuff was just very low and perfect takes, and those easy takes that he talks about. But he went back to the fastball. He said, look, you know, when he's got the fastball where he wants it, he's a different pitcher. And that was really the story for him yesterday. He couldn't get the fastball where he wanted it. But the other thing Mike said was that his velocity yesterday you know, 90 to 93, and that's a pretty good sign for him. So he was somewhat optimistic, even though Lindskum, for the second straight start, got banged around. And it is spring training. You have to keep that in perspective.
Yeah, you do. I think there's a level of concern there among everyone in the Giants, whether it's Bochy or Kruko. I did see his post-game spot, and I could sense a little bit of concern there, that the fact that he's definitely not where he wants to be. And after a while, when you get to this stage of the spring, you kind of want to see that. You see it with Kane and Bumgarner. And you know, it's very possible that it'll be a real up-and-down year for Lindskum once again. So, you know, I think there's maybe a little more concern than they're letting on. But, it could be worse. It could be, you know, a legitimate arm problem where his arm is, you know, is sore. It's an elbow or a shoulder. None of that seems to be in play. So we'll see up. Yeah.
No, and again, if he has a consistent release point, the speed is still there.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't have that consistent release point. I think that's the biggest issue. Hey, I acknowledge today the passing of one of my favorite names and pitchers in big league history, Virgil Fire Trucks. And, you know, I was in Miami, you know, when the old AAA Marlins were there. He pitched for the Marlins. I've got a picture of Virgil Trucks. But one of those real characters of baseball, Bruce, and I just want to acknowledge him a little bit with you. Two no-hitters in one season in 1952 with the Tigers. He only won five games that year. Two of them were no-hitters. Struck out 418 in Andalusia of the Alabama-Florida League. Still, I think, a minor league record. And in 1945, came out of the Army after not pitching for a couple of years, threw one game in the last week of the season, then pitched two games in the World Series and won a game. And had one of those great arms in baseball, 175 wins. Do you remember anything about Virgil Trucks? Was he part of your baseball past?
Well, not really. I kind of really got plugged in 1958 when the Dodgers moved out west and obviously a National League city. And if you run down anybody who played on any of those teams, right down to the bench, I can come up with a recollection or two, I'd say.
Okay.
But Virgil Trucks was a name in the Fireside Book of Baseball for me. And you know, like you say, anybody who throws two no hitters, and you know, those were not great Detroit teams that he was pitching for at the time. They were decent, but the name alone is wonderful. I mean, that goes into baseball lore on that alone, like Firpo Marbury and Van Lingle Mungo.
Very good. I knew you'd come in. See, I knew you. I could count on you to come up with that. But it was Virgil Fire Trucks from Alabama. I had him on the show a couple of times. When Verlander pitched his second no-hitter, I had him on because he was the first Tiger to do that since Trucks did it. So,
mm-hmm.
So I had fun with that. But I appreciate your acknowledging him. Marketability. I had this on the post-game show last night. And, of course, Posey is very marketable. I'm just wondering, if you're selling a product, a commercial product, that you want to market another Giant. And, of course, Sandoval may be going backwards a little bit, Lindskum backwards a little bit. Other than Posey, Bruce, who do you think is the most marketable guy in this ball club?
Well, I think Angel Pagan right now, coming off the World Baseball Classic, is a red-hot property. You know, he's a very striking-looking individual. He speaks extremely well for a man talking in his second language. He's got a great presence about him. He's the leadoff man, the center fielder. I don't think you could go too wrong there. I think you could do a dual thing with the two Brandons, with Crawford and Belt.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a bad way to go because these are two guys who are definitely on the way up. Crawford could easily win a Gold Glove and hit 260 this year, which would be a good upgrade for him in the hitting department. And Belt, you know, as we've seen, I mean, he's truly coming into his own. He's not going to hit, you know, the way he has in spring training, but I think to expect a 300 average with some power is very possible. And these are two really likable guys. So, I mean, that's a couple of ideas.
Yeah, no, very good. We had a couple of people suggest Hunter Pence. They had some good, you know, a coffee commercial because, you know, he's always jacked up and running around all the time. You know, that wouldn't be a bad one.
No, not at all. He's an incredibly interesting guy. And the more the fans find out about him and study him, I think the more they like him. And as long as he produces on the field, he's quirky. I mean, he's the opposite of Posey in terms of you know, marketability with that down home, you know, common sense kind of guy. He's a complete, you know, he's an iconoclast, a complete individual. But once again, he's a giant, and that's kind of what they're all about.
Yeah, as you like to say, he's a different cat.
He's a different kind of cat, yeah.
Yeah, you've used that one before. I like it. The other thing, and I like throwing these at you because I thought we had a lot of fun on the post game with it last night, and we'll do some of this tonight again. But if you had to get a voice to describe the 2012 season on a Giants World Series or season DVD, and you wanted to pick someone from the ball club, who would you pick from the ball club to be the voice of that DVD?
To narrate the DVD?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Jeremy Affeldt comes quickly to mind.
Okay.
He's an extremely bright guy. He's very funny. I mean, it's not going to be a comedy routine or anything or a lot of improvisation, but he comes quickly to mind in terms of a really well-spoken guy. You know, Matt Cain is a solid character. The voice may be a little more drab than Cain's. I'm thinking off the top of my head here.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And Javier Lopez, someone suggested him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Javier Lopez, extremely well-spoken guy.
But you want excitement. Even Pagan could be interesting to describe it. You know, because he's a very excitable guy. You know, he's very colorful the way he describes baseball, I think.
Yeah, and I could see his voice rising to the various occasions on the and there were so many of them. You know, it was still, to look back on all the things that made that World Championship possible, it's a series of just unbelievable episodes, really. So, I don't think you could go wrong with any of those guys.
No, in fact, I don't know if they're going to, you know, they'll do a DVD and probably John Miller will narrate it or Krug and Kipe or something like that, but I wouldn't mind a DVD with a player or two describing the Posey Grand Slam off Latos.
I think you'd be probably best off using maybe even three or four guys because it's really not fair to assign the whole thing to one guy. It wouldn't seem right to me that one guy would be in charge of the whole thing because it was such a team effort and so many guys contributed that you'd like to hear a few more voices.
Yeah, you'd say, I'd like to see someone describe Scudero standing there in the rain looking up at the heavens.
Exactly.
I mean, that's one of the great baseball shots, I think, of all time.
You know what else would be interesting? I'd like to do the DVD, and then you gather some of these guys, Pence, Affeldt, Pagan, and you have them talk about it as it happens, and you hear them speaking off the cuff. They're not reading from a sheet of paper.
Right.
That would be very interesting to hear.
Boy, very good. All right, Lee Hammer, where are you?
Do it quickly. The season's about to start, and we've got a whole new series of stories.
And you know something? You know, you bring up an interesting point. Well, you and I will talk about it next Saturday probably, but once that first pitch happens, you forget about 2012 in a way, and now you got to do it again.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, 2010 it wasn't quite as crazy or unbelievable as this last postseason, but things do tend to shift in a hurry, you know, and players who were sort of godlike then can come back to earth pretty quick if they go 2 for 37, you know, or have five bad starts in a row. So we're in the last stages of really enjoying that 2012 postseason, you know, unimpeded by any new developments in the. But, you know, with any luck, the new set of stories will be just as compelling. That's the great thing about baseball.
Yeah, they will. There's no doubt about that. All right, Bruce, have a great Sunday. I'll be back up. I hope to see you at the park this week.
You certainly will. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is a wonderful Bruce Jenkins of the SF Chronicle. And as I said, that baseball section should be coming out, Henry says, on Wednesday. And don't miss that. That's pretty good, too.